WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
It's been a couple of months since Superman was killed off in one of the last issues of Superman comics. Linguist Jeffrey Nunberg says Superman may have been the victim of his own name.
Of course, Superman isn't likely to stay dead. It's a safe bet he'll be brought back with a new secret identity and a new costume. He should definitely lose the cape, which evokes a troubling resemblance to late-period Elvis, another personality of uncertain vital signs. And the last sentence of the comic book suggested he may have a new name, too. For this was the day that a Superman died. A Superman. I had the sense they were trying to give the name back to the language as a common noun. Only it's a little late for that. The word began with Nietzsche, who used the German word Übermensch to describe a person who had shaken free of the cloying resentments of Christian morality. Some philosophers have translated this as overman or beyond man, but Superman wasn't a bad choice when George Bernard Shaw introduced the word in the title of his 1903 play Man and Superman. At that time, the prefix super was chiefly used to mean over or beyond in learned words like superabundant, superstructure, and supernatural. But the word Superman has had a bumpy ride from there on in, and it's taken the prefix along with it. One of the villains of the piece was Nietzsche's younger sister Elizabeth, whose strange story is recounted in a fascinating new book by Ben McIntyre called Forgotten Fatherland. Elizabeth was her brother's match in dementia, if not in genius. She married an unbalanced character named Bernard Förster, who was a disciple of Wagner and a rabid anti-Semite. In 1886, the two of them led a band of settlers to the jungles of Paraguay to found a colony called New Germany. Here they hoped that an Aryan utopia would flourish in isolation from the influences of decadence and cosmopolitanism, which was to say, the Jews. When the colony failed a few years later, Förster committed suicide, and Elizabeth returned to Germany. After her brother went mad in 1891, she devoted herself to looking after him and nurturing the cult that had begun to grow up around his work. By judicious editing and sometimes by outright forgery, she recast him as the prophet of German nationalism and racialism. She was an early supporter of the Nazis, who were eager to see Nietzsche's Superman as the philosophical progenitor of their master race. Nietzsche would not have been pleased by any of this. He disliked nationalism of all sorts and regarded anti-Semitism as a sign of feeble character. But the Superman was tarred with a Nazi brush, and when the comic book hero was introduced in 1938, it was as an American response to the Nazi type. Like the Nazi version, our Superman was an exceptional biological specimen, an uncritical patriot, and something of a moral simpleton. The resemblance didn't escape American leftist critics of the period, who even perceived an ominous connection between the S on Superman's chest and the SS tattooed on the arms of Hitler's stormtroopers. Of course, there were differences. Our Superman had curly blue-black hair that suggested a Mediterranean or Semitic appearance. And there was a nice twist in the story of his origin that was given several years later, where it was explained that he had acquired his magic powers when he escaped his doomed home planet to come to a new world under a yellow sun. It was a fable of immigrant success that Elizabeth Nietzsche would have envied. The end of World War II left the Nazi concept of the Superman pretty much discredited, with a man of steel in sole possession of the field. And the popularity of the character led in turn to new uses of the prefix super, to refer to anything that was grander or bigger than its predecessors. We got superstars, super savers, super bowls, and Super Tuesday, not to mention supermarket and the strangely contradictory superette. From there, it was only a matter of time until the prefix detached itself and set up a life of its own as an adjective of insincere and gushing approval. Oh, that was just super. But superlatives like these have short half-lives. If the NFL had it to do over again, you can be sure they would have called it the Ultra Bowl, the Mega Bowl, or maybe the Intense Bowl. In the course of things, the comic book hero came to seem, well, comic, and not even the industrious irony of three Richard Lester movies could redeem him. I'm sure Nietzsche would be relieved. Superman is dead, and with any luck, the Super Bowl is next.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist associated with Stanford University and the Institute for Research on Learning in Palo Alto, California.